Allora.
Welcome to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a five-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice. And a very happy St. Valentine's Day to everybody out there. This is Tuesday, February 14th, 2023. This is Chase, as always, joined by Nick. Nick, happy Valentine's Day.
Hey, thanks, Chase. Much appreciated. Now, it's definitely, you know, coming off a few disappointing losses here, but at least the weather's good down in Houston, and my Tesla shares are doing well. So,
well, congratulations. Yes, and always... It's always nice to be able to console yourself by looking at your bank account and your stock portfolio.
There you go.
Yeah. So it was a rough trip up to Oregon. There was, when Bill Walton was at UCLA, obviously they had the legendary 88 game winning streak, and his senior year, his third year of playing, because freshmen were not eligible then, his third year of playing, UCLA made a trip up to Oregon and lost both games. And now I think the 88 game winning streak had already been beaten earlier in the season by Notre Dame, if I remember correctly, but they were still, they only had one loss in the season, I think. And they go up to Oregon and get swept. And later on, they lost in the tournament too. So Walton's, not a lot of people remember this, but Walton's senior year, UCLA did not win the NCAA tournament. And that trip up to Oregon, Bill Walton, and still calls it, he'll sometimes talk about it on the games, the lost weekend. So we kind of had our own version of the lost weekend. It wasn't quite as dramatic. Yeah. But we did lose. We lost a lot of ground. The loss at Oregon on its own was not a big deal, except for the margin was not good. I could tell pretty early in the game offline when we were texting that we looked the way we looked, I could tell we were not going to be competitive in the game. Sometimes you just know. And I remember, you know, the first game against UCLA, the game started, and I said, this looks really bad. We're not competitive. And we're down by whatever, 19 at halftime, and then came roaring back in the second half. Second game against UCLA, we looked really strong to start the game, even though we ended up down by 12 at half because of that bad run. But I could still tell the intensity level was there. We're doing things we needed to on defense. We're making the plays we needed to for the most part. Against Oregon, you could tell right away, we were relying essentially on Oregon missing jump shots in order to like stop them. Whenever they really concentrated, threw the ball, went to Dante. I mean, it's like, we couldn't really do anything. And that's a combination of factors. Look, we were essentially a team, I think I've said this several times, that we're a team that was using a seven-man rotation for the most part. I know there's other guys who make their way in, but really a seven-man rotation. And we were down two guys in that rotation. Joshua Morgan struggled in recent games, but he's like a linchpin of the defense in certain regards. And when you're limited to only having true freshmen play there, which we really did. I mean, even if it's not Vince, you're talking about Kajani or you're talking about Niagu. All of them are true freshmen. Harrison Hornery is not a true freshman, but he barely played last season. And unfortunately, this game was not one of the games where Harrison could actually get going because they were immediately putting Khalil Ware and started just like throwing alley-oops at the rim, and that's Harrison Hornery's, kryptonite. It was a very tough game just from that standpoint, but we were, you know, Boogie hit some tough shots, which kind of kept the game respectable in score for the most part. It wasn't a 40-point margin, which I think it honestly could have been, just because we weren't really competitive in the game at any point. So that was really tough. I guess we'll talk about Oregon State in a second, but what were your observations about what you saw against Oregon?
I definitely agree with you that the lack of Re6 and Waters and Josh Morgan hurt, but even if they did play, like, we still would have lost that game, I think, pretty clearly.
I don't think we would have won.
Yeah.
It might have been a somewhat closer game, and you know, where like there might have been times where we got the lead down into single digits or something like that. But yes, we would not have won.
Exactly. Exactly. It probably cost us like 5 to 10 points, I would say. But like, you know, we still weren't winning. It was a good spot for Oregon. Oregon made shots. They played really hard. And they look good. I mean, like, you know, Dana Altman, you know, the dude, people like to say that, you know, he gets his players playing well by the end of the year. But, you know, or you could say that I was telling you this, he's a terrible non-conference coach, right? Like, you could go both ways with that whole narrative, but Oregon looked good. They looked the part of the top, I thought, 5-6 seed in that game, playing at home. So that was just a really tough spot for us, especially down the two guys. I thought Boogie did play really hard in that game. So I do want to shout out his effort on both ends. He was the one guy I thought really brought it. So just quick shout out there. And then, you know, with the Oregon State game, I guess we can get into that. That one really hurt. You know, the Oregon game, I think, like, you could write it off, right? Like, won one game, it's a really tough spot for the team. But I think looking back on the season, if they don't get into the tournament, you're going to look right at that Oregon State game.
Oh, that's absolutely true. I mean, losing the Oregon game is not going to keep you out of the tournament. But you do then kind of need to come back and beat Oregon State, and we didn't. That game... there's a lot of things to be said. Obviously, we were super ice cold from the outside, and I recognized it right away. And you know, I think I even said, you just need to stop. Even if we have the great shot lined up, we need to stop shooting threes and just focus on pounding the glass, because we did. It was like we were psychologically out of it when it came to hitting the jump shots. We just were not going to hit a jump shot. I think
I'll give you props too, because you texted me before the game. You thought we were going to lose.
And oh yeah, after
I was like, nah, you're crazy. No way. Like, we're going to come back. And nah, I mean, you were right.
Yeah, I think after I watched what happened against Oregon, just that we were so discombobulated, especially in offense. We were so discombobulated against Oregon. So let's I guess maybe take a step back to the Oregon thing for 1 second, right? Yeah. So Boogie had a nice game. I mean, he was 7 of 15 from the floor. Hit three threes. He did have two turnovers. We had four assists. I mean, he had a nice, really nice game. Kobe had a nice game as well. He was, you know, he didn't shoot great, didn't hit his threes, but, you know, he had four rebounds, two assists, a couple steals. He played well.
On a sprained ankle, too.
On a sprained ankle. Clearly favoring that ankle.
You got to love the effort.
Yes. Trey White struggled. I mean, he was 2 for 8 from the field. He's a freshman. He fouled out in that game. I actually thought he played pretty hard, although on defense, there's starting to be lapses on defense with him. I think you true freshman this time, these are the dog days of the season, right? We're talking about like mid-February, road trip up to Oregon. This is tough, and true freshman can hit the wall, even in the best of circumstances. And I think he hit the wall a bit this week. Now, look, it's not like he had 7 turnovers. I mean, he wasn't like just like, oh my God, he's just completely crapping the court. And I don't want to make it seem like that. He wasn't someone we could really rely on to give us something to win the game.
And if I can just interject here, just like a few instances, I noticed it really in that Oregon State game. And it changed a little bit in the second half, but in the first half of that game, which is really where we lost it, our second half wasn't great, but it was good enough. Up in Corvallis, it was that last part of the first half, and there was a play where, you know, one of their wings, I think it was Glenn Taylor, got the ball kind of at the top of the key, a little bit on the right wing, and Trey just was not in a stance, and Glenn Taylor blew right by him for a layup. You just can't have that happen in college basketball. I mean, the guys,
especially when you're playing these very low scoring games. You know, it's one thing if we're scoring at will and we don't have to worry about, oh, we're going to end up scoring, we're going to go down court and hit a three in next possession. No, I mean, everyone knew we were not going to be hitting a three. So, yeah, you can't have that. You can't have a lapse like that. So he's kind of – he'd already hit the wall. Now, then we got Drew, right? And I don't want to pick on a player. He's been a great Trojan, but look, he had 0 rebounds against Oregon. And, you know, he played 36 minutes against Oregon, and he's the for the most part, was most of the time either the tallest or the second tallest player on the court and giving you zero rebounds. I mean, that's an absolute killer. It's a killer, but it's also a killer from the standpoint of what you demonstrate to your teammates about kind of like your commitment to playing hard in the game, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And yeah. People
are going to feed upperclassmen, right?
Right. People are going to feed off of that. Now, he came back against Oregon State. He did have 8 rebounds, but he gave up. I mean, there were a couple times I just looked right at. He did not box out Taylor on a couple plays. I mean, easy layups.
Yeah.
He did not mix it up. He wasn't in there around the basket at the end of the game to try to get a rebound when Trey kind of got that rebound and then was essentially just raked across the wrist and the ball goes out of bounds. And, you know, I remember at the time was like, well, look, I mean, it was a blown call. The ball didn't go off the Oregon State player. It was just raked across the wrist and they missed the call. And that happens, yeah. You know, which is always one of my, I always laugh at the, this, when they go to these replays, when a lot of times it just demonstrates what happened was, yeah, the ball went off the player that should have had it. It's just the officials missed a foul call and they're not allowed to reverse themselves on the replay. So, but he, you know, on that, like Drew was hanging out at the 3-point line, you know, he wasn't, and I guess you could be out there to get like, you know, to, okay, we're going to rebound and kick it out for a three. We didn't really need the three at that moment, but, I would have liked in that moment of the game to be like, I wish all of our guys were crashing the boards, get the rebound. We don't need the three. Get the ball in the bucket. And we didn't have that. And it was to me a little bit of a microcosm of what we saw in the game. The other thing I'm just going to bring up, I'm just sure there's a lot more to talk about here, but Yaroslav Niagu played he played quite a bit against Oregon. He played 16 minutes in that game. Now, he wasn't absolutely terrible, so I don't want to portray it as like, oh, this is like, you know, what he was doing in there to cost us the game. He did not cost us the game. It was not his fault we lost. But he did play 16 minutes. He came back against Oregon State, only played 2. Those minutes against Oregon were minutes taken away from Kajani Wright. Now, I think it is for sure to say Kajani Wright is not ready to be like a full-time starter level player at a NCAA tournament team coming from a power conference, for sure. He's not at that level yet. He'll never be. We don't know. I mean, he was McDonald's All-American, but we don't know what he's going to end up being as a player. But he has some issues with his hands. But I do have to say, what I've seen of him lately is, as much as he struggles sometimes with catching the basketball, and that affects his rebounding, positionally on defense, he probably plays positionally on a man-to-man basis as well as any of our bigs, actually. Morgan is a better shot blocker for sure, certainly a better help-out shot blocker. But Kajani seems to position himself well, and he's a strong guy. He doesn't get bowled over too often, and he's gotten better at that. Now, that's one skill amongst many skills that are required for a player at the five. But I think that on its own should justify him taking those minutes instead of Niagu. That's in my personal opinion. And the fact that that we gave those minutes to to Niagu against Oregon, I didn't really appreciate, because I don't know. I didn't exactly understand what the purpose was. Like, why? I don't know if they thought, okay, well, Niagu's going to help us win this game by playing these minutes, or do they think he's just going to help us keep it close? I didn't really get it. I do know that against, like, basically in those minutes that he played, our defensive performance was very poor. The offensive performance was actually decent, but the defense performance was very poor. Defense performance was much better when Johnny Wright was in the game. That was mainly against Oregon State, which is not a surprise. But that's just my thought on – do you have a thought on those two players?
I agree with you. I would have gone with Kajani more in the Oregon game. My guess is the thinking behind it was just Niagu is more of a true five. But I don't think that's enough to justify the 16 minutes. So I do agree with you on that. One other kind of like side note on that Oregon State game that I noticed too, is just defenses just aren't closing out on Trey White. Like, there was a play in the corner where he had an uncontested three in the corner. There was a really soft closeout to him because teams are starting to play him as a driver. So I think having him as like a zone buster, right, in the Washington game, where you can get it to him in the middle of the zone and he can attack the rim. I think that's super useful. But, you know, when you have to space out these teams that play man, it just gets really hard on your defense as well. And I don't think his shot is broken, but definitely like a swing skill for him, I think, heading into next season. Can he hit that uncontested three-point shot consistently? That'd be big. Sorry, I know it's totally separate than what you were talking about with Johnny.
No, it's a good point. It actually dovetails into what was something I want to talk about, which was against Oregon State. And I know we're just jumping all over the place, but it's there's a lot to talk about from the game.
Yeah,
there were possessions against Oregon State where we were clearly struggling to identify what defense the Beavers were in. And I know there was one possession where they had kind of matched up with us, and the players, I think, thought the way that the Oregon State players were kind of positioning themselves, I think our players thought it was a zone, and we just started tossing the ball around the perimeter because there was they didn't contest the passes. They just kind of backed off and, you know, just tossed the ball around the perimeter. And then it took really to the end of the shot clock for our players to figure out that Oregon State was actually in a man defense, and then there was no kind of gaps for us to like attack on the zone. And I think that happened a couple of times. And that also goes to, you know, Trey White not really kind of taking up the position of like the guy at the free throw line when they went into that zone. It was a weird game for our offense. We really struggled. I mean, our offense was 0.89 points per possession. Is one of our worst games of the season, obviously. And we just couldn't hit anything from three, but it also just seemed like we were discombobulated for most of the game. And I, you know, you say this, I'm saying this as a spectator, but I said it to you during the middle of the game. I'm like, I wish we were just completely switched to a mindset that, hey, look, we're just going to get the ball in the rim and try to bang the rim until we can get the ball to go in the basket, you know, just pound the glass, pound the glass, pound the glass, especially since we had a real legitimate size advantage on them. I mean, they had like two guys that are kind of like big-ish type players, but like their main kind of like rebounder guy is Glenn Taylor, and he's like 6'5", you know, so I would have liked for us to have played more like kind of bully ball at the rim. I'm not sure it would have worked perfectly, but just the way we had kind of set up and that we were going to do a lot of jumpers and stuff, you could tell pretty early in the game, it just was not going to happen.
They definitely seemed to go to it later in the game. And I guess like, if we want to highlight the bright spot, I thought Vince Iwuchukwu looked really good. You know, he wasn't perfect on defense, especially. He had some nice moments on D, but his offense, especially his free throw shooting, I thought were rock solid. And you know, without him, I think we probably lose that game by high single digits. So quick bright spot with all the negativity surrounding that game. So it was a tough one. And just like reading all the commentary about it too. I mean, like, I think, you know, the Oregon loss, it was so much more justifiable than the Oregon State one. I know I've mentioned that, but the refs didn't cost us these games. Like they didn't. Like we beat our sweep, you know, I don't think we were ever going to win that Oregon game, but you know, the worst officiated game of the season, I felt like, was that Washington game at home, and we won. Right. So, you know, if you're like there are going to be bad calls in college basketball both ways. Sometimes it's particularly egregious with the Pac-12. But, you know, if you're one of those people that's like, oh, fire everybody after every loss, or, you know, if you're in the other mindset of, oh, it's always the ref's fault that we lost. Right. You know, you should probably stick to football. Right. Where, you know, it's college basketball. Good teams lose a lot in college basketball. I mean, Kansas lost seven times last year and won the title. And that's a year removed from us beating them by, you know, 30 plus in the Sweet 16 or in the round of 32. Right. It's just, it's a much different sport. The skill level across just the whole sport with all 300 plus teams is so good compared to what it used to be in the past. You get, you know, if a team in the, you know, 200s or 300s gets hot from three, it's not inconceivable they can knock off a top 50 or 100 KenPom team on any given night. So it's part of the it's part of what makes college basketball so fun and March Madness so fun when you see the upsets, but you're going to have more upsets in college basketball than you do in college football. That's just the reality of the sport.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. Well, all that being said, with the upsets and everything, though, we do have to look, I think, rather soberly at our prospects for making the NCAA tournament. Now,
yes,
Lunardi now has us out, which is no surprise. Yep. Because I think he had us like last four in before. We had us like last four byes before the Oregon game. So he had like us below almost everybody else.
Yeah.
And we lose both. Bracket matrix of the 100 and whatever different brackets as of Sunday morning. I think there's 100 they've got updated as of February 13th, which was yesterday, but that encompasses the weekend. SC was in 79, so 79% of them. Basically, last four in, along with like Kentucky and Texas A&M, North Carolina. Now, North Carolina, I think, has lost since they lost to Miami last night, so I don't think North Carolina would be in. Oregon is like the first four out, like on bracket matrix. But just because bracket matrix is saying this doesn't mean that's the reality. We could very well like be out of the tournament if the committee was selecting today. I have a feeling we might actually be out of the tournament. I'm just hard to know. I guess we were helped somewhat by the fact that UCLA came back and beat Oregon. Let me just talk about that really quickly, because having watched UCLA play Oregon State, so one of the things, so this is where I think we see a difference between, and I think you and I probably disagree about this, where I think we might see a difference between style of guy like Andy Enfield and a guy like Mick Cronin. So Andy has had, relatively speaking, a decent amount of success, right? I think he's 6-3 against Mick overall. Won the first five, and Mick won three, and then he won the last one. Andy's style is much looser. He's a much kind of even keel kind of guy. When he gets mad, he like blows up, but like he's, for the most part, even keel. Mick has a style of, he rides his guys hard. He's riding his guys hard. When you're playing a team, when you play a team like us, for UCLA to play a team like us, when our players are self-motivated and playing at their highest level already, there's not really that much Mick can do to like get UCLA to like play even harder than they already are, which is, I think, is probably at some, that's where it kind of turns counterproductive. And I think it probably does turn counterproductive sometimes when they're playing against talent that's like can match theirs. And that's why we've had success relatively. I think this is at least a theory of mine. Conversely shows that for the most part, Mick has had really strong success at like just having his guys beat the teams that are not as good as his team. And we've seen that kind of like time and time and time again, especially that one, you know, the COVID season, the 2019-2020 season, where they started out really bad. And then Mick just got these guys like winning over and over and over. And obviously Jonah Matthews hits that jumper to beat them in the last game of the season. But I think that had snapped like, it was like they had like a 9-game winning streak leading into that. I mean, it was like they had done really, really well leading into that game. And they were not a great team. I mean, they had struggled all, you know, for the previous year and a half. And they had won, let's see, they had won 7 games in a row leading up to that. They'd gone from 12-11 to 19-11 and finished second in the conference. So Mick has a way of kind of like grinding his players into playing hard almost the entire game, playing tough, hard. He'll embarrass them, chew them out, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Where Andy doesn't do that, right? So in a game where this would matter, I think would have been like the Oregon State game, because we had some guys playing with certain effort levels that if like Mick Cronin was on the sideline, reaming them, you know, maybe we squeeze out another 7 points and win the game, you know, and you could see that kind of like, because UCLA came out, they didn't look all that great against Oregon State either, but they just played hard, really hard and kind of like tough, you know, basketball the entire time, and just kind of grinded Oregon State out. And it was just too much for them. And after a while, Oregon State really couldn't score consistently. And that was that. And the UCLA won. So there's just a way he has of grinding, you know, the other team to death. And I think I texted you right after the Oregon game where we lost. I said, I think UCLA is going to win this game and we're going to lose to Oregon State. And sure enough, you know, Corona just got it done. It's because I think they, you know, I don't believe it or not, I do think Oregon's, I mean, Dante is really, really good, but I think there is some talent issues on the Oregon team that we just weren't able to take advantage of, partially because of personnel problems, partially guys hitting the wall, but also just not having that kind of like Mick Cronin crazy intensity to go into these tough road trips. So that's a mouthful. I've said a mouthful, but that loss Oregon had was a pretty tough loss. So this was the debate we were talking about, I think, after the or even during the USC-UCLA game or USC-Oregon game. Oregon loses the game. I mean, can they make? They still make the tournament? I think if you go by what you see on Bracket Matrix, they can for sure still make it. I mean, some people have them in right now at 15 and 11. But, you know, we're talking, they, you know, what happens? They've got five games left. They're all winnable. I think if they win all five, they are probably in. But I don't know. I mean, do you think Oregon will, if they win the last five games and they're 19-11 heading into the Pac-12 tournament, do you think they're in?
I do. You know, I think like sweeping the Washingtons up there is going to be a challenge for them. Like, it's just that Oregon team is too inconsistent, you know, night in, night out. It's hard to see them winning all five, to me at least. Maybe they do. But like, let's say they drop a game to Washington State, you tack on another loss in the Pac-12 tournament, then you're looking at a 13 loss Pac-12 team, and it gets pretty tough. So I think they probably do have to win all five, and I'd maybe give them like a 1 in 3 chance of doing it.
Yeah. Which would present a kind of an interesting quandary, because there's a hypothetical here where Pac-12 only has two teams make the tournament. Which is, I mean, I don't think that probably won't happen, but it's possible it does happen. And what's just weird is like the Pac-12 is like on every kind of computer model significantly better than like the Atlantic Coast Conference. And there are projections that have like 6-7 different teams from the ACC making the NCAA tournament. Now, I don't think that's going to come to pass, because I think North Carolina is not going to make it. But I mean, it is pretty crazy just how bad a situation the Pac-12 has gotten themselves in for this year's, really, I think almost entirely on basis of these bad losses out of conference.
Yeah. And beyond that, bad losses in conference, right? You have Colorado, now USC losing to Oregon State.
You know, well, right. Arizona. And that, of course, that matters a lot more, that because Oregon State has bad losses themselves, right? So if Oregon State didn't lose twice to Portland State, I mean, actually, that's like the entire killer, right? Because their other losses are to Duke, Florida, and Texas A&M. So, I mean, these are like not terribly bad losses. But those losses to Portland State, two of them, really hurt a lot. And look, the USC has one of their own to Florida Gulf Coast. But you know, that
SC does, or Oregon does. I mean, they were terrible in the non-conference.
Utah Valley and
Cal Irvine. You know, you got ASU dropping the game to Texas Southern. You got Colorado dropping the game to Grambling. You got Washington State going sub 500 with some real stinkers in there, right? It's just the conference as a whole. You know, Stanford going sub 500 and then coming back and beating Arizona, right? Things like that. It's just, I can't wait to get out of this league, Chase. Yeah. I mean, I can't stress that enough. And like, this doesn't excuse like USC losing to Gulf Coast, because that was totally unacceptable and could keep them out of the tournament. But, you know, you see it, time and time again, where this conference fails to deliver in the non-conference and, you know, gets it together in the conference. Whereas the Big Ten, like, they don't have that problem. I mean, they're never like, the Big Ten is not the best conference in basketball year in, year out or anything like that. But, you know, by and large, they deliver in the non-conference as much as they need to for, you know, decent seeding for their top teams.
Yeah, and you know what else they do too is I'm just looking at this. So, like, let's say, like, the going into this year, everyone kind of knew, like, the worst teams in the Big Ten were going to be Minnesota and Nebraska. I think everyone probably recognized that going into the season. So, what does Nebraska do outside of conference? Okay, they have a game against Maine. They have a game against Omaha. They have a game against Arkansas Pine Bluff. Those are, like, terrible teams. But those are the only – and Queens, and Queens College, who is – surprised. I mean, they just moved up from Division II and they're not that bad. But those four games are the only four games on their entire schedule that are not against power conference schools. The other, every other out of conference game for Nebraska was St. John's, Oklahoma, Memphis, Florida State, Boston College, Creighton, Kansas State. So they are, I don't know why that's happening exactly, but they are basically scheduling to make sure, like, okay, if we're going to lose all these games, at least we're losing against good teams. And they beat, and those four games that they had against non-power conference schools, they won those four. So it's like for the Big Ten, they were dynamite, right? I mean, they took care of business in those games. They beat Florida State and Boston College, who were down, having down years. They beat Creighton. So, like, they were doing the conference a favor. SC is just as guilty as the other Pac-12 teams on this, but the Pac-12 schedules too lightly. And you don't have, like, the bad teams being like, oh, we need to go and schedule against better teams to make sure that we don't have all these bad losses. So our guys are scheduling against all these bad teams and then suffer bad losses. Certainly having road games against these historically black colleges and universities is a disaster. I mean, that's a complete horrible idea. Anyway, I don't know what the pressure will be like exactly, but yeah, you can just kind of go through, like, Iowa, for example, right? Out of conference, they play Bethune Cookman at home, obviously not on the road, North Carolina A&T, Omaha as well. And then they also scheduled, Southeast Missouri State and then Eastern Illinois. So they played five non-power conference schools. Every other game is against a power conference school. So, and they're playing outside of conference, they're playing like 12 games, right? So they're playing four or five against mid-majors, maybe weak mid-majors, and then six, seven against other power conference schools. And yeah, it matters. It does matter. And these, like, ranking, that's the reason, like, all of these teams from the Big Ten are going to make the NCAA tournament. And it's going to be nice. And I think SC is going to have to adopt a similar scheduling model. I don't know if there'll be pressure if someone's going to, like, knock on the door and say, sorry, Andy, you can't schedule, you know, another UC school here. You've got to go, you know, figure out a game. Now, actually, it'll be, once we move to the Big Ten, it will actually be pretty simple to find power conference games outside of conference, because we can just go and play schools like Arizona State, schools that were previously in the Pac-12, right? Or our rivals in the Pac-12. So, and I'm hoping I'm hoping that what we do for scheduling is consistent with what other Big Ten teams have been doing historically, not with what the Pac-12 has been doing, because it just makes all the difference in the world. When it comes to how many teams from the conference are going to make the tournament.
So I want to add one thing too. And I think you kind of hinted at it, like, with the way the way Iowa scheduled, for instance, the mid majors they scheduled are all really terrible.
Yeah.
And they're at home.
Yes.
Right. You're not playing, if you're going to play the way people talk about bad losses, right? They lump in quad three and quad four, right? There is zero incentive to ever play a quad three non-conference game.
Yeah.
None. Zero. You get no credit for it. And it's more losable than a quad four non-conference game. And even within quad four, a quad four home game will be easier than a quad four road game. So I think the way you have to do it, right, just play like five or six quad fours, and then the rest just load up on quad one non-conference games, because you don't even get penalized for the quad one losses. You just don't, right? That's the reason that Oregon is still in contention, right? Because all their non-conference losses to, like, UConn and Houston, like, they just write those off as nothing. If they would have won, they would have gotten a ton of credit, but they're not even penalized for that. And if you look at the way we scheduled, like, Florida Gulf Coast, that's a top 200 KenPom team.
Yeah, right. And we have all we schedule all of these teams in the top between ranked between 100 and 200 in KenPom. So Florida Gulf Coast, Vermont, Fullerton State, Long Beach State. You know, we didn't do like UC Irvine this year, but they're all very similar profile. They're just good enough to get you in trouble. You know, there's an old saying like, you know, the player is like just good enough to get the coach fired. These games are teams are just tough enough to really cause a headache for your schedule. And play more games against either play Alabama State or play like a fully legit power conference team like Creighton. You know, don't play a school like Vermont or a school like, Long Beach State or Irvine. Don't play those schools, you know.
You get zero credit for beating Vermont, Cal State Fullerton, or Long Beach State, who are all top 150 KenPom teams, right? You get no credit for winning those games, and they're all much more losable than playing like Mountain St. Mary's at home. That was the one game I thought they scheduled correctly. And even though like they look terrible in that game, like if that was a Vermont level opponent, they'd probably lose, right?
Right.
So that's the point, is you give yourself more slack when you schedule, you know, teams as bad as Mount St. Mary's, where if you underperform, you can still win by 9 points and, you know, have some really crappy film to like, you know, show your team and try to improve from there. But, you know, it like that Gulf Coast game, like there was zero upside for that. I guess it was like a cool like social media thing with, you know, Andy playing his old school and such. But and we did lose two games down in the Bahamas, right? But we got the quad two win with BYU. And because they scheduled the Auburn game, if we get in to the tournament and we're like last four in or last four byes, it's probably because we beat Auburn and scheduled that game. Right.
Yeah.
As opposed to scheduling, you know, another Long Beach State type. Right.
Yeah.
So there's so many benefits of scheduling, you know, hard in the games that, you know, you get credit for and easy in the games that you don't.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Where does that leave SC? Firmly on the bubble where we've been a lot in the last during the infield tenure. This time of year, we have the home swing against the Bay Area schools, Cal first, Stanford second. I guess it didn't do us any favors last week to play the tough team first. So I guess we'll just live with it we'll live with it for Cal first. And then we go to the Mountain Schools, which for two really tough games. And then we're back with Arizona State. So these are really key games. Stanford has been playing very well. I don't think we'll probably have time to podcast again before we play them. But they have, you know, gone from looking absolutely terrible and, you know, 5-12 to they've won, you know, six of their last eight games. So they're at least, you know, you got to take them seriously. They did beat Colorado on the road. That's a real win. The rest of their wins were, they didn't beat Colorado on the road. They beat Utah on the road.
Utah on the road. Yeah.
The rest of their wins were all at home. But still, look, it's something you got to take seriously. So I don't know. Are we ready to look forward? You want to talk about these games?
Yeah, let's do it. I don't think they're going to have any problem with Cal, especially coming off a loss, the game being at home. That just seems like the classic get right game, and Cal is truly awful. They're a horrific team, and I don't think like matchup wise they can present many challenges. Stanford, on the other hand, like they've really gotten together on some level. They also have a lot of size and they're good on the glass. So I'm kind of glad they beat Arizona, because that's something the coaches can point to, like, hey, like they beat Arizona, right? Like these guys are legit, they're real. But matchup wise, like, yeah, there are a lot of challenges, and I think it could be a pretty tough game.
So on the Cal front, the personnel is going to be a little different than when we faced the first time around. They are not, Devin Askew got hurt earlier. We haven't really talked about that. I don't even know exactly what his injury is, but he has not been playing for the past couple months now. So, he's not going to be playing for Cal. He was like, you know, the guy who scored most of the points the last time we played. now kind of the guy that's been like more of the focus of their scoring has been Joel Brown, who is not surprised because he was coming back. He did not have a big game against us the first time around. I think he had 5 points. We kind of held him in check. Dewan Clayton is a transfer who only started playing in the last right around Christmas, right after Christmas time. So I think second semester for Cal. He didn't play against us the first time. He's, you know, he had a huge game at Stanford when they beat Stanford, scored 26 points. Since then, you know, he's averaged probably around 8 points a game. He's someone to keep an eye on for them. He's he'll shoot threes, you know, more of kind of a perimeter guy, more small on the smaller end. Other than that, we're going to see the same kind of collection of guys. So I think it's basically trading out Askew for Clayton. If we take care of business, and I think we're capable in this game is taking care of business, I think we'll be Cal. I don't think this will be as concerning of a game. Although, look, it needs to be said that Cal took Arizona State to overtime up in the Bay Area. So, you know, Arizona State won in overtime, kind of kept their season hopes alive. That was, you know, they were able to play them tough enough. Okay, Stanford, what has gone on with Stanford? Like, they all of a sudden, it's like these are, you know, serious games for them, and they're playing very well.
Chase, what do you think? 5 or 6 year extension for Jared Haas?
This is a great question, right? Because there's absolutely no way to justify what we've seen up till now in the season. And now they're coming alive and against Arizona, right? So they score 88 points. They have five different guys into double figures. Harrison Ingram is not a major scoring factor on their team. It's much more Spencer Jones, but also, you know, guys like Reynard and Angel. I mean, so it's not the guys who they thought. I think going into the season we're going to be the big scorers. Will Haas get an extension? I think he's done enough probably in Stanford's mind to save his job, which means that Stojakovic will stay there and still go to Stanford next year. I know that's what they were UCLA fans are wondering about. That's gonna be a tough game for us. It's gonna be a really tough game. They have big players. We're down Morgan. We might, you know, there's a scenario where I could see we might have to play. Obviously, Stanford beat us both times last year. We might have to play both Wright and Vince together. I have a feeling. And, you know, Drew has got to come with much more intensity against Stanford because they're going to be other big guys that they're going to be playing, and he's going to have to get tough rebounds. So, I could see that being a tricky game. I mean, I really think it's almost – that game is really, to me, just going to be like a boogie game. Because they're going to have to try to guard Boogie, right? With with Michael O'Connell. And you know, if he hits his shots, he can score 30 on O'Connell, no problem. But if he's not hot, we're in struggle. So gonna be a huge, huge game. You know, against Arizona, I mean, one of the things they were able to kind of neutralize Paulo a little bit because they played big and they had Reynard, Angel, and Harrison Ingram out there all together, three bigger guys. I don't know if they'll go quite that big against us. Maybe they will. I don't know. They are capable of going very big. The other thing is Kreese against Arizona, 3 for 10 from three. Against Stanford. He fired just a ton of threes, you know, only hit 30%. Arizona actually shot pretty well in that game. But Stanford just totally lit it up. I mean, that was the thing, is like they just shot out of this world from both outside the arc and inside the arc. So I think we've got to lock down on defense, play strong defense, rebound, take care of business. So all of a sudden Stanford looks like this really tough team to deal with. Unfortunately.
Yeah, no, right. And you get no credit for beating them, right? Because they totally tanked the non-con and lost by 20 to Cal earlier in the year. Again, just like, can't emphasize enough how excited I'll be to get out of this conference. Two other quick little pieces of trivia that I think are kind of fun. Do you know how many games Devin Askew's won in a Cal uniform?
I would guess 9 games.
Devin Askew has not won a game at Cal.
Oh, nine. I won a game. I thought you said played it. Oh, he's never. That's right. He's
Never won. So he DNP'd, and then the first he DNP'd one game, came back, they lost two, and then he did not play, and then they won, and then he played and they lost, and then he didn't play in two, and then they won, and then he came back like 4 games later against ASU and played 33 minutes, and they lost by 20. So he's not won a game in a Cal uniform. The other fun one is, do you know what DeJuan Clayton is shooting from 2-point range this year?
Oh gosh, 20%.
He is 15.9%. He's 7 for 44 from inside the arc. So that's another
What you're
fun
saying
one.
is we might want to think about closing him out on even Trey White can overplay him out there.
Little bit, yes. You'd think. So.
Okay, ask anybody. He had a hernia and so that's why he's out for the season. I didn't realize that. Okay. Gosh, anything else? I guess we could just quickly take a look at the other Pac-12 games this weekend, right? So Arizona's playing is at home against the Mountain Schools. I assume that they'll take care of business. Arizona State, those are going to be very big games for them. Arizona State's going to play both Colorado and Utah. And I think, to the extent there's any possibility of a team other than USC or Oregon making it in, it'd be Arizona State or Utah. And I'm not sure where that ends up. But if Arizona State does beat Utah and Utah loses both of those games, they are probably – they're no longer probably going to be in the top four, let's say, at the conference, to see if they get a first round bye the Pac-12 tournament, is my guess. And then Washington schools play the Oregon schools. So Washington is home against Oregon on tomorrow night, Wednesday. And that is a late start, 8 o'clock on the Pacific time, coast time. What do you think is going to happen there with Washington hosting the Ducks?
I'll take the Ducks. I think they'll beat them by like 10. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Oregon will win handily. Washington has just been. I just have no faith in that team, and I think they're in some ways one of the worst teams in the conference. But
hard to trust.
Okay. Anything else before we get out of here?
Just a few quick notes from across college basketball. We got Auburn. So. Auburn's a fun team to track. So if you're an USC fan and you look at the net, they're sitting at 35 in the net right now, but they're beating Missouri right now, 57-25 at home. So congrats. Shout out to them for taking care of business there. And that margin, if it propels them into the top 30, then that becomes a quad one win, that Auburn win. So that's something to keep track of. Washington State's the other team. That's a big one for SC. They're at 81 in the net. If they get up to 75, then the road loss up there goes from quad two to quad one, and the home win goes from quad three to quad two. So that would be big if that happened. They've got 6 spots to go. Outside of that, I guess across college basketball, I don't know if you caught that Auburn-Alabama game. I was really impressed with Bama in that.
Yeah, they looked really good. They absolutely look really good. I mean, Bama's a really good team.
That environment down there was crazy, too. Auburn.
Yes. Yeah, well, at Auburn. And Auburn has shown that they can really get it going crazy for those home games. I think you texted after the game, Houston versus Alabama for the national championship. I think that's like as good a pick as you can come up with at this point. Arizona has just kind of shown up and down, and UCLA, I do think, might have a ceiling on it. The Alabama-Houston thing looks legit to me. I guess also just noting right now, Illinois trailing by 14 to Penn State on the road, kind of relevant to see if Penn State can get in the tournament. and Duke winning by 10 against Notre Dame. That's not a surprise. North Carolina State trailing at Syracuse. And then the kind of the, one of the bigger games of the day, Creighton against Providence. That's very close right now. So interesting day today for college basketball. So we'll probably after hop off, try to catch some of these games. We didn't really talk about the situation in Wyoming, right? With Ethan and Max and and Jake Hyman. I would just say from, you know, we obviously had some criticisms of this way that Ethan played when he was at SC, but I think we both agree. I've never heard a negative thing about Ethan as a person, a human being in any way. I've never heard anything negative at all about Max, certainly not about Jake Hyman. You know, I have heard a story about what I think happened up there. I don't want to betray sources, but I would just say that if what I was told happened, it's a situation that you cannot blame the players for wanting to leave that situation. And if you were in that situation, you'd probably want to leave too and have no regrets about it at all. It's not fair to the players. It's not all to blame on the coach, by the way, too. I want to make that clear. It's kind of a situation outside of the control of the coach, although I don't think he helped. He helped the situation. I think he kind of pointed fingers at Max and Jake and maybe to a lesser extent Ethan, which he should not have done because they're having obviously a very tough year in Wyoming. So I do not blame the players for wanting to depart. And it's absolutely, from what I understand, it's absolutely has nothing to do with any behavioral issues with him and or conduct issues in any way. So I just want to make that clear. So I don't know whether those guys all have one more. They can play another year college basketball if they want. I know Ethan's already graduated, right? I don't know if Max has or not, but Ethan can go and pursue some other graduate program. So
Max has as well.
Yeah. So these are good kids. That was just a really bad situation for them. I think that they may want to even move down another level, just if only to make sure that wherever they go, that they can play as many minutes as they want, because they should have as much fun as they possibly can their last year of college basketball. So, that's all I've heard about that. I don't know if you have any thoughts, Nick.
Yeah, totally agree with moving down to, you know, maximize their minutes. I haven't spent a ton of time around, you know, Max and Ethan or Jake. I did like meet the Hyman family at the tournament a few years ago, and they're just awesome people and very pro Pac-12, even though, you know, they were rooting for UCLA, obviously. And, you know, having, you know, talked to a few people about the Andersons and the Agbonkolo family, like they're also awesome people and all that too. So, you know, I'm not surprised at all to hear that it wasn't their fault or anything like that. And it's easy to like blame the people transferring in, right, when you know, this season doesn't go as anticipated. But you know, definitely wish those three all the best in their next stop.
Absolutely. All righty, well, two big games. If you can make it to the Galen, make it, especially on Saturday. We're going to need it against Stanford, and fight on.